Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
Yes, that music can mean only one thing. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us for the next hour here on the program, joining us every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9 here on Robbie and Rex Road. PK, we got a lot of very positive feedback last week, and you're joining us for an hour, and we're excited to do it again this week. Welcome to the program.
I got a lot of nice compliments as well. I'm happy to be here. Got to figure out the traffic patterns a little better so that I'm not as tense coming in the door. I think I wound up on Joe's route today, which is not a pleasant avenue. But
Murfreesboro?
Oh, you know, you said you're on all kinds of crazy turns and everything, and I'm screaming at people who are driving 5 through the school zone instead of 15. But clearly I need to leave at 7 and not at 7:15. An hour commute, and I think it's literally 12 miles.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, that's a little much. So that's the first time I'd heard this theme. What's so special about this theme song?
There's a whole history behind it.
It's kind of boring, man. I was expecting something awesome.
That's the music that Frank Wodcheck picked for me that played when I was on with Frank, Mark, and Kevin
years. But I don't.
It's some wrestling theme. So you and I aren't wrestling guys, so we don't know it. But wrestling people love it.
Yeah. Apparently. Who is that wrestler?
The Hurricane. I have no idea who the wrestler was, but the theme is the Hurricane.
So the wrestler's the Hurricane?
I don't know.
The wrestler's a Hurricane, and I'm a Hurricane. I come in and stir things.
There you go.
You don't remember that? Because I know some wrestlers. I don't know the Hurricane.
I have no idea.
That's on you.
Okay.
I don't know any wrestlers. I just know that was my music, and it's my music
Ted
again.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. You know? Come on, give me something better than that. All right. Anyway, good to have you there, buddy.
Stick a fork in everyone's excitement.
Sorry.
So, PK, Ryan Tannehill, very bad on Sunday against the Saints, obviously. The Titans 0-1, they've lost 8 in a row. How concerning was that game specifically to you, given the way that he's played since he's been here, a certain level of consistency that he's had, and what do you think it means for this Titans offense moving forward? How concerned are you about Tannehill as they head into this game against L.A.?
Well, you would think it's an aberration. There's obviously a huge amount of anticipation now and a great deal of pressure on him in terms of getting back to some level of normalcy against the Chargers on Sunday. If he plays, you know, with any semblance of that trouble where the decision-making is poor, where he's throwing to covered guys for interceptions and he's missing open guys 2 weeks in a row, then I think, you know, you'd start to call it a trend and you could see some real concern. I expect that he bounces back and plays much better, that they bounce back and play much better. Reminds me of the scenario where they got pounded by the Cardinals a couple years ago on opening day. That was at home. Then they went to Seattle, which was obviously a very difficult setting, and they pulled out a 33-30 game where we all thought, oh, my God, they lost the Cardinals, and now they're going to go to Seattle, and there's no way they win in Seattle. It's going to be a 0-2 start, and that's the year they wound up being the number one seed, and I'm not suggesting they're going to be on a similar course to that. I think the thing is that in the back of everybody's mind, media-wise anyway, in the front of everybody's mind, fan-wise, there's this percentage of a chance that he's hitting his wall as a older guy. And if he's hitting his wall, then, you know, they're in big, big trouble. It's not as easy as just replacing him. I mean, if one of the two young guys played against that defense, it would have been more disastrous. And then my other big takeaway, and I know Joe hit on this as hard as I did, and we were talking about it in the press box, you know, as bad as the interceptions were and as little separation as the Titans receivers got, you can say whatever you want about Tim Kelly. He had a couple plays there with guys wide open. And if you hit one of them, you win the game. And if you hit two of them, you win the game comfortably. So the flea flicker was very successful, and Chig's wide open, and inexplicably Tannehill can't hit him. Spears, I don't know if that's a defensive breakdown on the roll left, but he's wide open over the left on the left sideline, and Tannehill throws him out of bounds. And then on the interception intended for Moore, Chig had, you know, 5-6 yards on two different guys 10 yards away in the same area. He didn't even have to, you know, change his look to the opposite side of the field.
Yep.
And so the missing of the open guys is almost more concerning than the interceptions.
So maybe this should be a weekly feature. Just popped in my head after a Titans loss, like the PK blame list, you know, like your give me your top three or five or whatever. Blame, who are you blaming for this loss? I think
Tannehill is 1, 2, and 3 maybe. I mean, receivers not getting separation was a problem, but I think we convinced Arts that they were going to be somebody that they're not. They're not going to get separation. I mean, Blake Bedingfield's piece at my site on Monday, I put 4 pictures together that he sent me of guys covered. I mean, I don't know how we convince ourselves that these guys are going to get separation. There's not going to be a lot of separation from the wide receivers. I mean, they're going to get some yards after the catch in an ideal world. There'll be some separation on occasion. But the way they added and structured things, they, again, refused to get themselves a burner who's going to beat people over the top. They don't believe in it in the way other people in the league do, and it's just not how they're going to play downfield. So Hopkins has to get in those windows, and Tannehill needs to make better throws. Burks, I don't know if he was completely himself, but they couldn't get him in any kind of rhythm. They're like, all right, we're going to throw to him 3 times in a row here and see what happens, or let him touch the ball 3 times in a row. Nothing big happened, and then that was that. Chig, the most overdrafted guy probably in the history of fantasy football by people in Middle Tennessee, is going to have some games where he does things, and he's going to have some games where he doesn't. But their best chances for separation.
Been a pretty good draft pick if Tannehill hits one shot. But okay.
Their best chances for separation come really from Chig and Spears, whose speed for their positions.
And Kyle Phillips. I mean, like short space separation. But,
yeah.
Hey, that's 4th and 6th in the 11, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. But the space comes from those guys being fast for their position. At wide receiver, the separation, I heard you say it, Robbie, is a good point. Hopkins will get it from the route running, but not from the speed.
Right.
And he's certainly slowed down. And I think we all said the reason he could be better than all these other veteran wide receivers they picked up on 3rd contracts late or 4th contracts is because he's not as speed reliant as they are. He's more of a craftsman with the routes and more of a combat catcher. And we didn't get to see that in this first game.
They've lost 8 in a row. And I know it's broken up now into 2 seasons, 7 to end last year and now the 1 to begin this season. But it is, I mean, for a lot of these guys that have been here, it's an 8-game losing streak. How much pressure is on them just to get a win on Sunday, given the fact that they haven't won since the Green Bay game last year?
I don't think anybody in the locker room is thinking anything about last year's 7 games, and I don't think they should be. I know it's hard for fans not to stack it on top. I tend to not think of it either. I mean, last year's a completely separate thing that was look, I expected the second half of last season, you can go back, it's on the record. I expected the second half of last season to be far more difficult when they were 7-3 because the schedule got far more difficult. But then the injuries completely undid them. And I'm not saying it's okay, but the second half of last season was a wash based on the injury accumulation that they got away with for a season and a half up until that point. And then people who were too important got hurt. Tannehill, Simmons only missed 2 games but wasn't himself. They missed Autry for a while. The secondary was down to, 4th stringers. And they were playing some good teams there. And Jacksonville finally, got its moment. And so I don't carry over the end of last season. I mean, there's 45% new guys on this team. So 45% of the guys on the field didn't lose seven games at the end of last year. So I don't rate that as very important. But this was a bad loss to start the season. They've had bad losses to start a lot of seasons lately. And, again, I think if next week we're talking about a similar performance, then there's an issue. Chargers are beatable, but beatable in a way that the offense is going to have to do some things.
Yeah.
Because odds are the Chargers put up some points. So the Titans are going to have to find a way to put up some points.
We'll continue to look ahead to the Titans-Chargers game coming up on Sunday with Paul Koharski from PaulKoharski.com. That's coming up next. Koharski with us until 9 o'clock today on the program. So looking forward to that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they are referred to so often. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Paul Koharski with us here on the program talking Titans. PK, what did you make of Derrick Henry's usage rate on Sunday? 48% of the offensive snaps, had 10 carries in the first half, just 5 in the second half. What did you make of the way the Titans used him on Sunday?
It was odd in that when they're not passing well and they're looking for an efficient passing game, what you lean on generally for them is high volume Derrick Henry. No, it didn't work in the little bit that they gave it in the second half, but I would have thought they would have given it more. The slip screen in the earlier was a hugely successful play for them, so I would have thought they would have put themselves in position to try something like that again. And it's not like Spears was lighting it up. So I thought it was odd. Mike Vrabel certainly made it sound like it was an aberration. And I think there maybe it's Tim Kelly kind of losing track of what's going on. I think that Tim Kelly – I'm surprised at how many people automatically want to blame Tim Kelly. I thought Tim Kelly was interesting. There's a lot of empty, which was interesting. There was interesting stuff in terms of the backfield, though I don't like a Julius Chestnut, Tyjae Spears split backfield snap. I mean, Derrick Henry's got to be one of those two backs.
That was a three and out, by the way, in which Derrick Henry didn't see the field.
Yeah, that's silly. But again, not getting separation from his receivers, he schemed up two touchdown plays. Maybe the Spears thing wasn't schemed up, but
I think it was.
So that's schemed up, and the other things he schemes up two touchdown plays on a day where they can't get open.
Yep.
That's a huge win. I mean, if they hit one of those plays, he's heroic. If they hit both, they win by 10 probably.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think the and the Burks targeting. I mean, it's hard to.
Burks wasn't open.
That's more on like Tannehill or Burks or whatever. But I think the Henry thing, the best stretch of offense they had in that game was kind of going back to last year. And I do think they got away from it too much. And the bottom line is fans, and this goes back to your, because I kind of disagree with you on like last year not mattering. I mean, if you're a Titans fan, you've been sitting there looking at 15, 17, 13, 16, game after game after game. So now you come out in this new OC and it's 15. And you're right. Those carries? Plays should have been made. Huh?
Not points.
Points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the points. And so so the carryover is just Titans fans, one, sick of like their team losing.
Oh, they
also
should
sick
be
of
sick
their
of the
team
points.
Losing and never scoring.
No, when you average 17.5 in a year, no, I agree with the carryover on that. And then you come out and you score 15 and you don't get in the end zone. I mean, that's a travesty.
People are going to rip the OC, right? The OC is the most. But I want to go. So I asked you about
I think the plan and the scheme were pretty good. And the execution was horse bleep.
Right, sure. Yeah, I agree. But what else? Offensive line? I mean, you don't have Aukerman on your blame list? Are there
offensive,
no Aukerman?
Offensive line was okay. But, like, if you go and look at two of the interceptions – and I'm not letting Tannehill off the hook by any means, but Dillard lets Tannehill get hit where he can't torque all the way. On the other one, the Hopkins, I don't know why he throws it, but he can't step into it at all. It's a flat-footed throw that a guy with an elastic, electric arm might try. And Tannehill is not that, and he knows he's not that. You know, special teams, you got the five field goals. Hooker makes the great play. The punt block was terrible. And we know that Aukerman gets a complete free pass on that, so there won't be, you know, any in-house trouble for that. I like your joke that Aukerman's the boss of the whole thing. Aukerman might give Vrabel some grief for something that happened on the punt block. I like where you went with that.
It's like Gordon G. Like, I work for Jim Tressel. He doesn't work for me.
But look, I don't have a problem either with the not going for it on fourth and six.
I didn't
either. And this is a place where I think the analytics just don't take the context of the game in. They were moving to field goal range with relative ease. Evidence, they kicked five field goals. They weren't punching the ball in. Evidence, they hadn't punched the ball in the whole game.
It's good analytics.
And thank you. And the you know, the odds of them getting a stop were pretty good. They played pretty good defense the whole game. So I thought, you know, a play that is under discussed really is that they let Carr go for it on the 41-yard pass that beat Fulton. If we were writing this from the New Orleans side or talking about it from the New Orleans side, that's really big that on a third and six with the game on the line in terms of keeping the ball, not only did they throw it, but they threw it big, and that was his best throw of the game. Say what you will about Fulton giving up the play. He was in pretty good position, and that was a pretty good throw that landed right in the arms of the receiver.
Fulton was not in pretty good position. He was like 5 yards behind him.
Well, all right. It was a good throw. It was a very good throw. And then they get another one on third and four where they with a downhill run, which is the one thing the Titans stop. So you could say the Titans played a good defensive game, but on two snaps where they really needed it, they didn't get it. So there's blame.
Yeah.
Titans in the biggest situation defensively do not produce on the two biggest snaps in the game.
Well, and here we are. We're 1 week in, and they're taking on Herbert and that Chargers offense on Sunday, and you're already looking at the situation, and we'll see what the injury report looks like today. But Fulton's got a hamstring through 1 week. Hooker's in concussion protocol. Trey Avery's with a hamstring, and you look at the corner depth right now, and you're like, 1 week in, it's already a huge problem, and they could be without all three of those guys.
And they give up too many chunk plays. I mean, this is a carryover thing, and most of those guys are carryover guys. Bunting got in on it and gave up the only touchdown of the game, and to his credit, was completely accountable, raised his hand and said it was his fault. But, I mean, you know, you play good defense, and then every once in a while there's a 25-yard reception just out of nowhere that seems like just nobody was in close enough, not close to sticky.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there was already Byard after the game at one point, and I don't even think it was a question, but he was like, you know, we're not going to get into this, you know, two sides of the ball, like we're a team, we're a family. So it's like, man, already
program.
This is being discussed. But the thing is, and Jeff Simmons, and this has happened before too, and he's absolutely right, but I think they're – what you wonder about is the D front and the secondary, like getting like the D
That's
front, like, because I mean, again, Simmons after the plays can't give up X plays, X plays, you know, and he's right because that secondary. I mean, there was also a couple of the plays with Olave against Molden where it's just a mismatch. But
and they went for that mismatch entirely. I mean, they're moving Olave. They would have gone after McCreary once Molden's on the field because Fulton's out. That's a massive mismatch. You know, were the Titans finding a mismatch? Did the Titans have a mismatch to find? There you could question Kelly a little bit. Like, was he looking for one? Was there one to be found?
Well, I think another thing with that, though, is the Saints are very good in the secondary. I mean, that's one of the best secondaries they're going to face. Yeah. So, credit the opponent.
What are they going to do if Hooker can't go this week, if Avery's still out, and if Fulton's still dealing with a hamstring and he's either can't go or he's limited, what are you doing in the secondary this week if you're the Titans?
Hello, McCreary Kendall moving outside? Builder.
Yeah, like,
yeah, no, I think McCreary moves outside, but then who's your slot? I mean, I think it depends on what they think of Wilder, really, and where he fits
and what they
best.
Think of Mike Brown. Because if it's Molden in the slot, then it's going to be Byard and Brown, right?
Yeah. I mean, right away, your lack of safety experience in the depth gets a light shined on it.
Yeah.
Against Herbert, who will be able to make you pay for that. And look, you know, you can't prevent a concussion, you know, whatever. But Hooker just stacks up the injuries, and they're not soft tissue stuff.
He's stacking up the injuries while also becoming a great player. Like,
right. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He makes the two biggest, you know, plays defensively / special teams of the game. Now, odds are he's not available for the second game. So, you know, you're going to take him for half the games to be really good and the other half the games to not be around.
It's not ideal.
It's not ideal at all. We'll have more with Paul Kaharsky coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025, our phone number. So the offensive part of this, we've talked about the lack of points. They've scored over 20 points one time in their last eight outings, which is obviously atrocious. I mean, you can't have that moving forward. You know, L.A. is coming off a game where they gave up 460 yards passing to Tua. They also scored 36 points on their own. So I was saying this earlier, PK. I like the Titans' defense. I think they've got a really good defense. I think the Titans' defense can play well on Sunday, and they can give up 24 points. And the question is, can the offense get there? And, you know, a lot of that's going to come down to Tannehill and the way that he plays and how he responds. But I think it's a big game for Burks. You talked about it. He just wasn't open on Sunday. And I don't know how much of that is still the injury that he's dealing with. He had the big drop in the game too, but – If he can't get open on a more consistent basis, or he has games where he just looks invisible like he did on Sunday, I don't know how good this Titans offense can be if he's not going to be a big part of it.
Yeah, it seemed tentative. Now, is that tentative because of the knee, or is there some unsurety? Correct word?
No, but I love it. Yeah. Let's go with it.
Here's the other thing. When a quarterback is out of sync so badly, I'm a big believer in safety blanket throws. Get a guy going by letting him throw to his guy. Now, unfortunately, his guy is Nick Westbrook Akina.
Say his name correctly, yeah. Please. If you're going to rip him on this show, you're going to say his name correctly.
Listen,
damn it.
They ingrained the wrong pronunciation into us for so long that I still fall back into what I was trained to do, and I'm trying to be retrained.
That's okay.
So
we still have some
apologize.
People in this market who call Tannehill Tannehill, so
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. So, I, you know, do you want him to have some early throws to NWI? I don't, because they're unthreatening, but.
Did NWI make plays Sunday, Robbie, or did I miss that? I thought he made some plays.
He made some plays. So yeah, they were completions. Wow. In that regard, they were dangerous as compared to completions to the other team.
Is it bad to have first downs on catches? I didn't think that was a bad thing in football.
But you know, also, you know, so have him throw to his guy to get him in some rhythm. Have him throw some easy passes, which are screens, you know, and run. And those are three things that they didn't really do. But you've got to find something early that is assuring to him. You can say, look, he's a veteran. He'll shake this off. He doesn't need that. This crowd is going to be amped up to jump down his throat. And this defense is going to come in. I know it's not a good defense, but they're going to be looking at him ripe for the taking.
Well, they got a guy who, one guy in particular.
Yes.
Who's got
a matchup that's favorable. So I think they got to do something early that lets him feel good about himself. I'm not talking about him like he's some kind of kid. You do that for kids too, though. But you got to get back to basics for him in some way that lets him get started, because if he's 0-3 or 0-2 on the first series and getting booed off the field, you can't tell me that there's not going to be a mental aspect to it for him. And I think they got to do everything possible to not allow that to happen.
Do you think we talked about? And I don't remember. It's like you have Gentry to my left and you to my right. But there was some discussion up there amid the massive noise about Tannehill and some the velocity on some of his throws.
I mean, he was not throwing the ball with much zip. Now he was also throwing the ball flat footed, and he's not a guy who's going to be able to throw the ball. You know, in his prime, I don't know that he was throwing the ball great flat footed. But at his age now. He's got to be able to step into it. A little bit of that is the pocket around him. I also felt like he created trouble for himself sometimes or felt it when it wasn't necessarily there. So he needs some confidence in this offensive line and a willingness to step up.
But real quick, because we talked about this earlier, in camp, but not one time did I think, ooh, he's lost a little bit of the fastball.
That's a really good point. You know, and I wrote at one point, and I still believe this. You know, we were talking so much about Willis and Levis that I came back, I think, from Minnesota on a Monday and watched him really carefully and wrote a piece about Tannehill's mastery of the new offense.
You said he's going to be amazing in the opener, folks.
I didn't say he was going to be amazing in the opener, but I said, you know, we're talking so much about the two young quarterbacks. Let's not forget the starter and how this thing keys around him and how since the very beginning, the first time we talked to him about the Tim Kelly offense, it seems like he's got this thing. He's got this thing. And I think practice reaffirmed that. Now, if they have another bad offensive game on Monday, another one of the stories is that training camp is crap in terms of getting a read on what a team is.
The problem I have with and you bring up maybe creating problems for himself that weren't there at times. The offensive line early in the game was bad. There's no question about it. He was getting hit, and the pass rush was all over him. I thought it got better as the game went on. And look, the pass rush for the Titans was all over Derek Carr, too. But he hung in there, and he made some good throws. He had an atrocious pick to Amani Hooker. But he made, for the most part, good throws in that game. So I don't know how much I buy the Tannehill was worried to death about what was caving in around him all that much. Like, Derek Carr was dealing with pressure on the other side, too, and did it well and handled it better. Like, Tannehill, to me, at times on Sunday, PK, just looked like he was making one read, going with it. He was staring receivers down in the offense. I don't know. He just looked a little unsure of himself out there, and I'm not used to seeing that from him.
Yeah, that unsurety I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, he did.
And there were times that he only looked at half of the field,
yeah,
for sure, where something was slipping out that was safe and comfortable on the other side, where he could have just said, all right, this side where we've got things, and this could be part of the design, I don't know. But this side where I'm supposed to be going has nothing going on. I bet the leak out on the other side is a good alternative right now, and he didn't go there.
Yep.
You know, the other thing is the red zone. You know, this is traditionally a pretty good red zone team. We know how much they practice the red zone. It's probably comparable to what other teams do, but
Vrabel talks situational football all
constantly,
the time.
And they had no answers in the red zone, which is another reason why fourth and six didn't feel like a crazy thing not to go for. I mean, he could make some throws, and they could make some gains in between the 20s, but down in tight quarters, it wasn't coming easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Ted Gwynn does best and worst coaching decisions for us at The Athletic, and he put that not going as one of his thumbs down.
Well, look, an analytics guy is going with the analytics matter what. He's not going to allow for an exception to the analytics.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you've got to look at the situation. In the moment, I was like, they got to go, right? But then right when he kicked it, I was like, well, yeah, you got the timeout, you
got
your defense. 3 o'clock
stops with a 2-minute warning
and
also.
And you're moving it between the 20s.
And the defense has played pretty well.
You only have to get to the 40 with big-legged Nick Folk.
At that point, a field goal kicker that you felt somewhat reliable in based on, you know, comparatively speaking to the other ones that you've trotted in here in camp. Like, the makes that, you know, some of the kickers have been in, like Badgley in the preseason game, he made a couple. You're like, geez, that looked horrible. I thought Folk was fine.
It's good. Yeah. I didn't have a huge problem either with the offensive holding decline that left, you know, a rookie nobody kicker.
I probably have a bigger problem now with that.
Vrabel didn't like the way the defense played right there. and a 52-yarder for a guy that, you know, I could see his stance on.
Neither of them. I mean, both of them are not arguable.
Yeah, they're not outrageous by any means.
Yeah. But, Folk, I mean, looking good. I mean, I got to think that Craig Aukerman gets some credit. At the press conference, the 20-minute press conference with Aukerman, make sure you ask him about what he did with Nick Folk to get that distance, okay?
You know, everybody has their rules about showing up on time and early being on time and all of that. On coordinator day, late is on time for me.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue our discussion with Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com on the Titans coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. The Titans home opener this weekend, and we want you to tailgate with us downtown before the game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern, located across from Bridgestone Arena's Plaza this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans Week 2 matchup against the Chargers and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show presented by Parma Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. So make sure you check that out coming up on Sunday. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keys are here with you on this Wednesday morning.
Stilly just dunked on you, and he's totally right. NWI has 2 20-plus-yard catches, and as Stilly says on my text line, I only call him Stilly when you're around. It's kind of weird.
He should be called Stilly universally.
But Stilly and Paulie is going to be a great show. Quote, they ain't the Dolphins. Not like the Titans have a bunch of 20-plus-yard catches ever, end quote. And Jared is absolutely right.
I admittedly understated NWI's contribution. I don't know that I understated his contribution. I'd prefer that Ryan Tannehill's safety blanket be someone generally more dynamic than NWI. I don't think there's a sin in that.
How many safety blankets are huge playmakers? If you make the play, you make the play. What safety? That's what, isn't that what safety? Like Phillips comes back, he's going to get like an 8-yard catch.
Okay. That's fair.
Whatever.
I prefer.
You just hate him. You just hate him.
I don't hate him. I like him as a 4. I don't like him as a 3. And I think that's completely reasonable.
You're just upset that you've already lost Racing Math in camp, and now he's coming for NWI.
Well, look, I thought Chris Moore was the next guy, and I thought it would be. I thought it would have been flip-flopped. Chris Moore gets way more work in this game, and NWI is kind of like the guy ready to go, and instead it's not that at all. So I got to apologize to NWI myself.
Well,
I keep underestimating.
And let me expand. While I think they need to do safety blanket stuff with Tannehill, it pisses me off that they need to do safety blanket stuff with a guy of that experience. He should be able to get himself in position, and his receivers, prime receivers, Hopkins and Burks, should be able to get themselves in position where he doesn't need these easy, comfortable throws at the beginning of the game to get himself into a rhythm. Should come out firing, and this offense that we've been talking about for 6 weeks or since Kelly got hired should be able to just come out and go.
Based on what you've seen from Arden Key throughout camp to this point and now through one game, can he be a double-digit sack guy in your mind?
He's terrific. I mean, if it's not a double-digit sack guy, it's just because they're spreading things around so much. Harold Landry was not – I mean, I thought all three of them were good, but Landry was not. There was one play where – and I tweeted out video of this, and it was in Blake Bedingfield's piece. And a lot of people thought that Landry showed more power than I suggested. Well, the person who was taking – the offensive lineman who was taking Landry's initial hit was absorbing it, was going backwards on purpose to absorb it and then reset and hold him off. It wasn't a particularly strong move by Landry, who then had to turn and chase the quarterback and looked like he was favoring one leg. He did not run well. So off of this game, it didn't look like Landry's, you know, back.
Yeah.
Looked like Landry needs some time. If Landry needs some time, you know, why not play Gibson more than 7 or 9 snaps? I don't know. But they talk about, we'll play Harold less, and then given your first chance, they don't play Gibson or Weaver at all. They can't help themselves. They want their best guys on the field all the time, and I understand why you're inclined to do that. I would be undisciplined that way, but they could be more. I mean, there were snaps to be had for lesser guys in that game, I would think. Rundown snaps.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the Landry part of it, it's in one way, it's encouraging that he played 88% of the snaps, so he's out there basically the whole game. But I'm with you. I didn't think there was much there. Like, we've talked about guys coming off the ACL, how long it takes them to actually get going. His is a little bit different because it's been over a calendar year at this point. So how long is it going to take him to get back up to full speed? Like, there's a difference, obviously, between practice and a game, and hopefully it's just one game, you're getting back up to full speed, and then from now on he's ready to go. But they need both of those guys coming off the edge to cover up what we talked about in the secondary earlier that's already going to be tested coming up on Sunday against L.A.
And key, I mean, it's clearly, the more you look at it, the more clear it is that it's a fumble, the same way that Josh Dobbs' play was a fumble. You need consistency there. Err on the side of calling it a fumble. Err on the side of letting the play out. Then let replay do its job.
Yes.
And don't be so reluctant to change the call.
Yeah, I mean,
it's pretty easily fixed if you do those things.
Just the blowing. That's got
don't blow the whistle.
The blowing the whistle there thing, like, by now everyone should understand. You don't know what happened. Even if the ball came forward, you don't know what happened. You have no idea. So if you don't know, you have to. That's one that. And then after that, yeah,
a huge error. Yeah. It's a huge error.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we're going to see that play. I mean, I think Vrabel's exactly right. We're going to see that play, and it's going to look a certain way, and we're going to see the exact same play called differently. Consistently.
Well, I applaud him for speaking as he did about it instead of doing the I'm not going to talk about officiating. Because what he said is inoffensive, shouldn't get him in any trouble.
He knows the line accurate. Of not quite getting, fined,
right.
But still
expressing himself and getting his point across.
Right. And then inviting everyone to, hey, why don't you guys call the league? Yeah, please. Ask the league. All right, Pete,
he said the league will talk to you. We're like, no, it won't.
Yeah.
Talk to you a little bit more.
Give me that special phone number, Vrabel.
Yeah. Come into the other room. Let me call the league and show you how it goes.
Yeah. All right, huge question for you. Are you applying to be the Tennessean's Taylor Swift reporter?
Are they having a Taylor Swift
You didn't see
reporter?
This?
I did not see this.
Specifically dedicated.
No, they are having a Taylor Swift reporter. A Taylor Swift beat.
I think I am far too old and far too male for that job.
You think that a male can't have that job?
I think it should absolutely be a female on that job.
See, I ask a question and PK takes it to Mr. Caveman. Okay, all right. I think that you should apply for this job.
Actually, what's the pay?
I think the big well,
also it's a $33,000 a year job.
No,
47 tops.
No, it's not. And in all seriousness, there's a lot of people upset, including some people I'll applaud for being outspoken who work in that company right now who are pissed about it. You think about some of the
things that aren't covered
now, and the value put on this.
What's the price? Did they put out a salary range?
It's more than what you said.
47.
It's more
47
than
is like it's more than 47.
I think it's absolutely yes. Someone was tweeting about the pay and how it's more than she makes, and this is someone who's been in the company a long time. I was like, man, good for you coming out, and I'm not even going to get into that.
I am incredibly sympathetic.
I'm very disappointed that you did not come ready to have fun with the Taylor Swift beat.
I'm incredibly you're allowed to. Is your texting broken? I am incredibly sympathetic
of the world
to anybody
I'm responsible
who
for that.
Is working at the Tennessean, especially who's been there for a long time. My thoughts and prayers are with you and everybody who works for Gannett.
Boy, someone on here says, who is this clown complaining about caught passes? But then, we don't need that kind of language.
Language on the text
I
line.
Scaled it back. I'm not complaining about caught passes.
We're all pro NWA, okay? How about that?
Yeah.
I'm pro NWI when he's their best receiver. I'm against him being their best receiver. Yeah. I'm perfectly clear.
I'm pro quarterback hitting wide open receivers. That's what I'm pro.
Yeah.
We'll see if he can do that on Sunday.
I'm pro 20 plus points.
I think we're all on the same page here.
We are.
I think also the three of us generally presume they're going to play a lot better this week.
I do.
And in that regard, we're different than virtually every member of the fan base.
They go 3 and out. How loud are the boos?
Right away, you think the booze? Right away?
Oh, if they go three and out?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll be cracking the window above our seats, Jim.
PK, great to have you in with us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks,
enjoy
boys.
It as always.
Don't block the box. Do lock the locks.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We will be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Charles Robinson joining us on the program tomorrow. So looking forward to that. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.